Welcome to Political Coffee, your one-hour thought-provoking news and commentary as you begin your day. And now, here's your host, Jeff Krupp.
All right, friends, great to have you with us as we begin our second hour today. 503-589-1220 is the Power of Buick GMC talk line. So your free speech is under assault in a way like maybe never before. So what do I mean by that? Well, we'll get back into this article in the Federalist, the 15 insane things of H.R. 1. And I began the show by asking this question. Because there's a provision in this bill that deeply threatens your free speech. I asked this question, how would you feel if the politicians made it a crime to criticize an election? I just want you to think about that for a moment. That is precisely and literally what is in this bill. And I will get to it. The other thing is that Fred Girard, Senator Fred Girard, the Republican leader here of the Oregon Senate Republicans, is key. Is key to stopping a lot of bad stuff. In fact, I got an email from Rich. By the way, you want to send me an email. It's jeff@1220.am or jeff@kslm.news. I get both of them. Rich writes, H.R. 1 and bills here in Oregon. So I guess we can say that the influence of the Chinese communists is alive and well. Through the politicians they own, if the bills like this don't show a person the fingerprints of the Communist Party, I don't know what does. I wonder what the communists offered to the politicians to sell out our country. And he asked another question, and I'll just address that here quickly. Just to let you know, folks, Monday we are moving Political Coffee back to 1 hour because we are going 12 hours of live political call-in talk radio. Stacey Ann's show, Good Morning Salem, will move to 9 o'clock. The 2 hours in between from 7 to 9 will be filled with Brian Kilmeade live. And then after Stacey Ann, 2 hours of a new show, live, Charlie Kirk from Turning Point USA. You see him on Fox News and other places. His live radio show. And then, of course, Hannity live for 3 hours and Mark Levin live for 3 hours. I think, I haven't fully checked, but I think KSLM will be the only radio station in the entire state of Oregon that has political talk radio live for 12 hours. Now, Rich wants to know, it's a bold move. What's the driving factor behind it? Well, it's twofold, threefold. Number one, having the most live call-in talk radio gives you the opportunity as a listener or a caller to listen to and participate in the very latest of news, because when breaking news happens, people want to talk about it. That's the first thing. Second thing is, it's going to become more and more important, talk radio, during this time of censorship by Facebook, Twitter, blah, blah, blah. And if H.R. 1 passes, it's really going to become important to political free speech. And the third one is that Rush is now gone, sadly. And there is a block of time where more people, like myself, I'm just going to be honest with you, I don't always like his fill-in talk show hosts. I love Rush's show, and I love that they are playing some of his great clips, but I don't particularly care for some of his fill-in hosts. Just how it is. I'm sorry. and I don't think I'm alone. It has to do with style, has to do with presence. There's a lot of things, right? So I think there are people that are looking for other radio shows during that time block. And that's why we're offering Charlie Kirk live during that time block. And Stacey Ann, for that matter. So those are the reasons why. 503-589-1220 is the Power Buick GMC talk line. 503-589-1220. All right. This does explode the opportunities for election cheating. Same day voter registration, we talked, that was number six. We talked about that. But it also eliminates, it effectively bans the signature matching requirements on absentee ballots. This is a real problem, folks. Number seven, it prevents the cleaning up of voter rolls. States cannot use a combination of voter inactivity and unresponsiveness to maintain voter lists. But may also instead remove illegitimate voter registrations only where officials obtain some other unspecified objective and reliable evidence that the registrant is ineligible to vote. That's what the 20 attorney generals says in their letter opposing this bill. They say this is an attack on reliable methods that states have been using to maintain voter lists without specifying any reasonable permissible alternatives, and it belies any actual interest in preventing voter fraud. The objective, rather, seems to be to prevent meaningful voter list maintenance altogether. What this bill also does then is threaten any election official or poll watcher who might undertake questioning of any voter or attempts to establish his or her eligibility to vote. Section 1701 says it shall be unlawful for any person, whether acting under color of law or otherwise, to corruptly hinder, interfere with, or prevent another person from registering to vote, or to corruptly hinder, interfere with, or prevent another person from aiding another person in registering to vote. 5 years in prison. Election officials or poll watchers who might question the signature on a ballot, on the envelope, the voter secrecy envelope, would now be prevented from doing so and could get 5 years in prison. Number eight, it unleashes mobs on political donors. What it does, it requires that political speakers and nonprofit organization publish the identities of their donors. Political speakers. That's all kinds of wide open. I mean, that's a barn door open so wide you could drive a Mack truck through it. Heck, you could probably fly my airplane through it. That creates blacklists for leftist activists to target. Not that they would ever do that, of course. It also requires massive compliance costs for candidates, citizens, civic groups, unions, corporations, and nonprofit organizations. Many of these provisions violate the First Amendment, protect incumbents, and reduce the accountability of politicians to the public, says the Heritage Foundation. It's all supposed to, and by the way, what's interesting is the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, expressed concern about these provisions in a letter to top House Democrats. The ACLU said it could harm political advocacy and expose nonprofit donors to harassment and threats of violence should their support for organizations be subject to forced disclosure. It also gerrymanders districts to favor Democrats. So now it allows a government commission to redraw the lines. Number 10, it makes vote hacking easier because of massed forced voter registration and the fact that you can't clean up the voter rolls. Get how this works? Number 11, it lets former felons vote even before they've completed their sentences. And of course, there are bills in Congress and bills in Oregon to allow convicted felons serving time in prison to vote. Number 12, it helps 16 and 17-year-olds vote illegally. It requires states to allow 16 and 17-year-olds to register to vote. But when you combine that with a ban in the other provisions of the bill on voter identification and restrictions on the ability to challenge the eligibility of a voter, there's no way you're going to be able to check to see if a 16 or 17-year-old actually voted. And it establishes a federal pilot program in public schools to register 12th graders to vote. Number 13, it bans keeping the records necessary for an election audit or a recount. Section 1502, it bans state and local officials from preserving the record of paper ballots. Number 14, mandates ballot drop boxes. This is where you get the chain of custody issues and all of these, you know, ballot harvesting, all of that. It bans saying you can't do that. It mandates you gotta have them starting 45 days before an election. And it allows for the anonymous submission of absentee ballots outside of the mail, which is exactly what you got with ballot drop boxes. Number 15. It gives U.S. territories extra Democrat seats in Congress and the Electoral College. Yes, it forms a commission to consider granting 5 U.S. territories voting rights, but not statehood, but they can vote. It's an open attempt to rig Congress. I mean, think about it. They would have 18 new Electoral College votes and 10 new U.S. senators. Yeah, they're not states, but they have the every right and ability to act as a state. And they'll all be filled with Democrats. Why? Because all of these jurisdictions are heavily welfare state dependent on the U.S. government. Folks, this are just the 15 ones dealing with voter rolls. Now, let's talk about how it damages your free speech. This bill, according to the Institute for Free Speech, which is doing line by line, word by word analysis of it, their summation is it imposes sweeping new restrictions on speech about campaigns and public affairs. It greatly harms the ability of Americans to freely speak, publish, and organize into groups to advocate for better government and the causes of their choice. It puts onerous and unworkable standards upon the ability of Americans and groups to discuss the policy issues of the day with elected officials and the public. There are other provisions which violate the privacy of advocacy groups. We just sort of talked about that, and their supporters. But it also stringently regulates political speech online. Now, how does it do that? And compels speakers to include lengthy government-mandated messages. Well, I'll tell you on the other side. Oh, you're going to love this one.
Jeff now at 503-589-1220. That's 503-589-1220. Let's return now to more of Political Coffee with Jeff Krupp.
We are back, friends. Great to have you with us. 503-589-1220 is that Power Buick GMC talk. I'm asking the question this. How would you feel if a law was passed that makes it a crime to criticize an election? How would you feel if the politicians did that? How would you feel? It's a crime to criticize an election. That's in effect what's happening under this analysis by the Institute for Free Speech of HR1. Now, this is actually from the 2019, the January 20, because they actually introduced this bill back in 2019, okay? And since it's almost an identical bill, they're continuing with putting out this. What it does, it takes the Federal Election Commission and it makes it, instead of a bipartisan six-member agency, to a partisan five-member agency, completely under the control of the president. It's all going to be political decisions, all right? That's not how it is today. But get this. It empowers the chair of the commission, who will be handpicked by the president, to serve as the de facto quote unquote speech czar. Now, what kind of power would the speech czar have? Well, he can appoint the commission staff director, prepare its budget, require any person to submit under oath. Let me say that again. Require any person to submit under oath written reports, answers to questions. The speech czar will be able to issue subpoenas and compel testimony. What's the effect of that? Any person plus it gives the general counsel of the commission new powers to investigate without the commission's approval, any person. The general counsel can issue subpoenas on his or her authority without an affirmative vote by the commission. And it gets worse, folks. It also basically, it has some other changes that basically make it, well, it just dictates to Congress who has the right to testify in committee hearings. No kidding. I mean, there's a lot of other things here, but bottom line is this bill gives the ability of one person to compel testimony by anyone, including judges, and forces them to testify. I'm not kidding, folks. And justify their rulings. But it also says that we, you and I, any person, can be subject to being a public speaker and having to include government mandating messages. Now, how's that free speech? Oh, and saying that we would have to list, who's supporting us out there giving a speech by name. Or if we put something up, maybe on Facebook, like, you know, I do the show plan every day on Facebook. That would apply to it. This is a hugely, and folks, there are fines associated with this. Okay? So if the free speech czar doesn't like what we're saying, because you see, the panel, the new 5-member panel, remade from the 6-member panel, is tasked in the language of this thing with monitoring ads for wrong speech, as it's called. You got to be kidding me. Who's going to determine what is wrong speech? A free speech czar or a speech czar appointed by a president? Unaccountable really to anybody except a president. Not accountable to you. So what if this person said that us criticizing how the election in 2020 turned out, because we believe that it was stolen. And if we say that in public or in a speech, that then is wrong speech, illegal speech. Brent Burkhart sent me a text and said, it's the truth.
Feel it in your heart and feel it in your soul.
Yep. Oh, and there's more. I'll get to all of it. Push your phone calls on the other side. 7:30.
Come on and sing my song all night long.
Call Jeff now at 503-589-1220. That's 503-589-1220. Let's return now to more of Political Coffee with Jeff Krupp.
24 minutes till the top of the hour. We'll get back to the phones in a moment. 503-589-1220. Yes, is that Power Buick GMC talk line? Or shoot me an email to Jeff at 1220.am or Jeff at KSLM. Dot News. Lee writes me an email. So if H.R. 1 passes, why would we even need to vote at all? Seems like we would just surrender to the ones that know better and live under their rule. Yeah, the elites. Linda writes an email. There are so many outrageous items in H.R. 1, you wonder how many of them are just put in there for sensationalism. So we all take our eye off the most important ones. You know, that's a good point. It really is. She continues. There are so many items in there that to outrage people, and I just don't think there are enough Republicans up to what it will take to stop this. We're really in trouble with that H.R. 1, making it illegal to criticize a politician in the Soviet Union of old. Most of them don't even read these bills. They just listen to what's on the radio or television or just discuss it with their buddies. At the OR, discuss it with their buddies at the Capitol Grill. Our government will be filled up with more than it is right now with just unelected officials that are trying to enact laws without representation. Yep, that's exactly what H.R. 1 is. Part of there's a lot of executive summaries here from the Institute for Free Speech, and I'll have all of this on the show plan so you can read it. But probably the worst is that it unconstitutionally regulates speech that mentions a federal candidate or elected official at any time under a vague, subjective, and dangerously broad standard that asks whether this speech promotes, attacks, supports, or opposes the candidate or official. The standard is impossible to understand and would likely regulate any mention of an elected official who hasn't announced their retirement. So in other words, this might make it impossible for me to criticize Kurt Schrader. Or anybody else who criticizes him. See how insidious this is? Because the language is vague and it is very broad. So there are penalties associated with this, folks. So when I opened the show asking this question, what if a law was passed that makes it a crime to criticize an election? That's precisely what this is. If I criticize the fact that Joe Biden got elected, if this law had been in effect, if I criticized it, I would have committed a crime because it might have been construed as an attack or opposition to a federal candidate. And the fact that I think the election was stolen, that inconsistencies took place. All of this is broad language in the bill, and it's all under the interpretation of guess who? The speech czar. The chairman of a newly elected or a newly constituted from six down to five member highly partisan organization called the Federal Election Commission. It's just one of many commissions, by the way, this thing establishes. And all under a lawyer, a general counsel that works for that chairman and the commission that has broad power to issue subpoenas without commission approval. And the commission chair, the czar, can compel any person to testify, provide written documents. Any person, including judges. Is there a threat to your constitutional right of free speech? Yep. Then it gets into ads and organizations to file reports and blah, blah, blah. I mean, it is stunning what it does. At any rate, folks, you need to communicate with Wyden and Merkley about this. Because this is much of what is guaranteed to us in a constitution and is literally under assault. Oh, and by the way, H.R. 1 says that any legal challenge has to go through the democratically packed already District of Columbia Court of Appeals, where they are sure to get a favorable ruling that, hey, it's constitutional. Which means then it's got to go to the U.S. Supreme Court. Eventually. Except they have to agree to take it. What happens if they don't agree to take it? What happens if the fix is in? You know, like with John Roberts. Who, by the way, did you see that John Roberts was the only dissenting vote in an 8-1 U.S. Supreme Court decision, saying that on college campuses, free speech can't be regulated the way campuses are doing it? He was the only vote against it. He dissented, basically saying, Yeah, the student didn't have standing. What? So don't think that John Roberts and the U.S. Supreme Court is going to save your right of free speech, because they may not. So two things need to happen here, folks. You need to pray, as I did this morning, and I hope you do every day. And for those of you who don't feel any condemnation from me. I mean, that's your choice. But for those of us that are people of faith, and I don't care whether you're Jewish or you're Christian, doesn't matter, Catholic or evangelical, you need to be praying that God will supernaturally intervene in Salem with Fred Girard and his thinking, and all the Senate Republicans, that they need to walk out in the face of threats of intimidation and everything else. They need to take a stand for liberty on principle. And you need to pray that the U.S. Senate will not do away with the filibuster, because the filibuster is the only thing that's going to stop H.R. 1 in the U.S. Senate. And that means you need to pray for Joe Manchin and this gal, this cinema U.S. Senator down in Arizona who's up for re-election. You need to pray for wisdom, supernatural understanding, and then you need to be involved. You need to contact Fred Girard's office, ask him to walk out, lead the Republicans in a walkout so that he'll have leverage to come and negotiate coming back and not allowing the usurpation of our rights and our freedoms. And wisdom. And then you need to be contacting Wyden and Merkley. I'll have all of that available for you on the show plan. All right, let's go back to Art, and then Kathy, and then Freddie. We'll probably have to hold Freddie. Art, go for it.
I was going to point out, and you did there towards the last, that this has passed the House and now goes to the Senate. And, of course, if... you know, they break the filibuster and all that kind of good stuff, then it can become law, and that, of course, is Schumer and Pelosi's goal during this whole mess, because they only got 2 years to do, because, well, right now, they absolute power corrupts, absolutely. And if you ever doubted it, just look what's going on. The House is passing lot bills without even having committee hearings or anything, which the people are not being able to get involved with. And we need to call up Kurt Schrader or whoever your representative is. I don't know if DeFazio is yours, Jeff. But
yeah, he is. By the way, my state senator, I was wrong about my state senator. It's actually Lee Beyer, who's kind of a moderate Democrat. It isn't Sarah Gelser. She's just north of me, about 3 or 4 miles.
Well, and, you know, obviously, if Beyer does, your senator does vote for that bill, then start a recall for him. But getting the people that do have Sarah Gelser, because she passed it out of committee, even though, you know, the testifying was 3-1 against or 2-1 against, or, you know, which she's not listening to her people. But I did want to say that we definitely need to get a hold of our representatives and say, we're not liking what's going on in the House. They're not having hearings on bills. They're just passing laws without doing the process, and let them know how unhappy we are about it, because Pelosi is writing those laws and passing them without the people's voices being heard.
That's right, and that's why they've got fences around the building. Thanks, Art. Hey, Kathy and Freddie, hang on. I'll get you, I promise.
Later.
7:48.
Call Jeff now at 503-589-1220. That's 503-589-1220. Let's return now to more of Political Coffee with Jeff Krupp.
It's 10 minutes till the top of the hour. I will read the joke that my friend Burkhardt sent to me, and it's about hell and Kate Brown. But I got to go to the phones. We go to Kathy. Kathy, you're back. Your thoughts. Welcome.
Okay, so I was schooled a couple days ago on the Constitution, and I suggest everybody read it. And the five freedoms, which are like, are they subtext of the First Amendment? Anyway, one of them is my right as a citizen to, for redress of grievances. So doesn't that apply to criticizing an election?
It does. You've just pointed out one of the many unconstitutional concepts in this entire bill. In fact, a bunch of these, Kathy, and you've just articulated one of them, have already been ruled on by federal courts, not just the U.S. Supreme Court, but other federal courts, and is standing law. And you know what they're trying to do here, Kathy? They are betting. They're betting that they've got this provision. This goes into the Washington, if it's challenged, and it will be, it goes into the D.C. District Court, the Court of Appeals, which is packed and loaded up with a bunch of Democrats, leftists. They're betting that the Supreme Court won't take it up. And if the court, D.C. Court of Appeals, says, yep, this thing is good to go, it's constitutional, all of these other prior court rulings are just wiped away.
Why do Democrats never have to explain themselves? They never have to explain a thing.
Well, because the press doesn't make them.
Well,
and when we have alternative press that is equal to the mainstream media, and we're not there yet, but when we do, then we can force that. Unless it's illegal, of course. If the Democrats have their way. Isn't that frustrating, Kathy?
Yes, I'm beginning to feel like Democrats are trying to pick a fight. Sorry.
Oh yeah. They are. I mean, they're trying to provoke us into armed rebellion. They really are.
All right, well, everybody.
Thank you, Kathy. I appreciate it. You're right. They are trying to pick a fight, that's for sure. Let's go on to Freddie. Freddie, good morning, brother. What do you say today?
Now I see why they have all the National Guard around the Congress now. You're right. They are trying to provoke that. But this is really a big case of overreach. And it's not only affecting the Republicans, it's affecting the normal Democrats, too. I posted something about gas prices going up. And I had complained about it, and a number of Democrats that I know agreed with me, and they normally don't agree with anything I say. So they are pushing the envelope, and they're pushing the envelope too far because they want a one-party rule, and they're trying to cheat their way there. And I tell you, this is going to blow up on them. And as far as anybody that's a Democrat, you need to vote them out of office. And anybody that's a Rhino, you need to vote them out of office. And Jeff, I mentioned the other day that we need to have a constitutional test on these politicians. It has to be a essay exam, and it also has to go in front of a board, and just like you do in the military. And if they don't pass, they don't get any recommendation or any money. Because we want people that are going to live and die by the Constitution, just like the Founding Fathers did.
So let me ask you this. Should you have to pass that as a qualification to just be a candidate?
To be a candidate, yes. And, you can't really deny anybody running for office, but you can deny their support and their recommendation from the party. And that's what I'm getting to. If you don't pass this oral board and you don't pass the written examination, that's an essay examination, then you don't know enough about the Constitution to support and defend it in Congress or any political office. So you're not qualified to be a politician. It may be a wet dream for you, but that's all it is.
All right.
You've got to do your homework, Jeff.
I mean, it's a very interesting idea. I mean, you can put, look, by statute, we have qualifications for, say, running for state representative. You have to be 18 years of age. You have to live inside the district. Why couldn't you put a qualification that you have to pass a test that says you understand the Constitution? It's an interesting idea. It might be unconstitutional. It might not be. Interesting. Let's go to another caller. Caller, your name. Good morning.
This is Rich.
Hey, caller. Hi, Rich.
Yeah, to Fred's deal, the Marion County Republicans already are doing something very similar to that, to where they're determining or asking questions of the candidates before they support them.
So the political parties ought to be doing this. I mean, seriously, ought to ask serious questions about the Constitution, both the U.S. and Oregon Constitution.
Well, I don't know about that, but I know that they're doing it about other questions they're asking them to decide whether the Marion County Republicans are going to support them once it gets, you know, once they get past the primaries.
Yeah. Okay. I like it that they are, and I think it ought to be expanded. I just think back to my own experience running for the House of Representatives. I still don't know. I learned much about the Oregon Constitution from just one session with Chris Ann Hall that I never knew before. And it probably would have been good if I had known that before I'd gotten elected. Thank you.
Well, yes, I totally agree. The one thing that really concerns me is that no matter how much we know about the Constitution, these people are violating the Constitution and they don't care.
Yeah, and that's to Art's point about, you know, if you violate the Constitution, your oath of office, we ought to start a recall. I think he's right. I mean, that's our right as citizens, and they don't care. If you don't care about the Constitution, I'm going to make your life miserable because you're making my life miserable. Thanks, Rich. Appreciate it. The joke.
Bye.
A Texan, a Floridian, and an Oregonian all die and go to hell. While they're there, they spy a red phone and ask what the phone is for. The devil says, well, it's for calling back to Earth. The Texan asks to call Dallas and talks for 5 minutes. When he's finished, the devil informs him the cost is $1 million. So the Texan writes him a check. Next, the Floridian calls Miami and talks for 30 minutes. When he's finished, the devil informs him the cost is $6 million. So he writes him a check. Finally, the Oregonian gets his turn and he calls Salem, and he talks for 4 hours. When he's finished, the devil informs him the cost is $5. When the Texan hears this, he goes ballistic and asks the devil why the Oregonian got to call Salem so cheaply. The devil smiles and replies, since Kate Brown took over, the state has gone to hell, so it's a local call. Thanks, Burkhart. Friends, thanks for listening today. This is serious stuff, so you better be active. Call Fred Girard's office. I'll have it up on the show plan momentarily. Make it a great day. Stacey ends up next with Good Morning Salem.